So this time I didn't manage to talk for the whole period. I'm going to have some time for questions and answers. Last few times I talked too much. Okay, so you can ask some questions. Yeah.
Do these little agitations, mm-hmm. do these multiply and wiggle to grand events like the war on terror right now or the Third World War possibly?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so just small acts of bugging somebody or causing them harm, can they lead up to big actions?
Yeah.
Yeah, even on an international level. Mm-hmm. They certainly have some relationship, don't they?
Because if we're all interrelated, that we should know.
Pardon me?
Because we're all interconnected.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And you can see in international politics, sometimes one country gets a charge out of aggravating another country. Yeah? You can see this. They do these little tit-for-tat things in international politics. And certainly that can build up, it can escalate to a high degree of conflict. Just as within a personal relationship, if we keep bugging somebody, it can really escalate as well. Mm-hmm. Oh.
The question, it's not very clear, but it seems that most of our misconceptions are kind of actively thought in our mind and actively approach anger and do all these things. So it would seem that by calming or following ethical discipline, that we would, by that alone and through finding that and using concentration, we should be able to, it would seem that we would be able to perceive reality properly. Mm-hmm. So why is it that there is the extra step?
Of wisdom. Okay. Okay, so that's a good question. So if we can calm our negative and verbal and physical actions through ethical conduct, and if we can develop concentration and focus the mind single-pointedly, then shouldn't we just by virtue of that be able to eliminate the afflictions and perceive reality? No. Okay. The reason being that, we talk about people who have attained very deep states of meditative concentration, where they can abide in these blissful states of samadhi for quite a long time. And there's a whole description of different states of samadhi. There's the four, meditative stabilizations of the beings who were born in the form realm. Then you can even get more ethereal and you have four states of concentration within what's called the formless realm. The beings there are so involved in their samadhi, they don't even have bodies, Their mind's just, you're focused on infinite space for eons, okay? But the thing is, you can be focused on infinite space for eons or on infinite consciousness for eons, or you can have an extremely, extremely subtle state of mind so that you can barely tell if there's perception or not perception. It's hard to say. You can have all of that, but you still haven't eliminated the root of the suffering, which is the grasping of true existence. Okay? You've developed very firm concentration, so you've been able to avoid looking at the the wrong conception of ignorance, You're so involved in your concentration that your mind's not agitated. But you haven't been able to prove to yourself that the object that ignorance apprehends does not exist at all. Okay. Let me back up to explain this a little bit, okay? Because when we have attachment, anger, and these things, they're based on the fundamental misconception, which is that things exist in and of themselves. It's called inherent existence or true existence, independent existence, that things exist from their own side, with their own nature, under their own power, independent of everything. And this is how things appear to us in our normal life. We've never known anything else, so we don't even know, have any clue what we're talking about when we first hear this, because we don't even know that the way things appear to us is incorrect. When we grasp onto things mentally, we aren't even aware that the way we're apprehending them is incorrect. That's a big problem in this whole discussion for us. You know, it's like, I often give the example, if you were born with sunglasses on, and somebody starts saying, you know, when you have sunglasses on, everything appears darker than what it is, and all these dark things that you're seeing, they don't exist in the way they appear, but you've been born with sunglasses on, and you've always seen things as dark, and you don't have no clue what these people are talking about. You know, what do you mean that things appear dark? They just, this is the way they appear. You know, this is the way they are, this way I apprehend them. What are you telling me, that they're non-existent, you know? That this leaf isn't really, you know, dark green, that it's bright green, you know? That's just an analogy, okay? So we don't even see that. But to remove that ignorance that misapprehends things, we have to generate the wisdom that sees the opposite of what the ignorance is seeing. So the ignorance is apprehending true existence, which does not exist at all. And we need to develop the wisdom that apprehends things as empty of true existence. Okay? So that the object of the ignorance and the object of the wisdom are mutually contradictory. You can't have both of them at the same time. Okay, so we need to generate that wisdom that shows that what the ignorance is holding on to is real, is actually non-existent. We need to do that in order to eliminate the ignorance. Concentration alone does not do that. Concentration just gets your mind very subtle and very still. Okay, but what we need is the analytical wisdom that can look at what ignorance apprehends and then investigate, and is what ignorance apprehends, does it really exist or not? Yeah. So you need to do that investigation. You know, ignorance is perceiving this. Does that exist? Can things possibly exist in the way ignorance apprehends them as existing? So you need to be able to investigate that and prove to yourself, no, it's impossible things exist that way. Okay? So you need to be able to do that to eliminate the ignorance. Concentration alone doesn't do it. Okay? Remember when Geshe-la was here and he was saying that if there's a rope, you know, he gave the example, if you have a coiled rope and it's, you know, kind of twilight or something, you can't see so well. Well, you look at that and you think it's a snake. Yeah, it appears to you as a snake, your mind grasps onto it as a snake, and you're holding there's a snake there, and then you get terrified and you're freaking out because of the snake. Okay? And remember he was saying that, you know, saying if your fear is of the snake, you know, the snake that's in the meditation hall, telling somebody that there's no elephant in the house is not going to do anything for them, is it? Because they're not afraid of an elephant in the house. They're afraid of a snake in the meditation. Yeah? Okay. So you have to disprove the existence of the snake in the meditation hall to remove that. If, okay, so that's showing how you have to, you know what you're looking for and analyze and not get off track. What concentration does is, you know, if you're afraid of the snake in the meditation hall, concentration is saying, what a beautiful fan. And you're just looking at that fan all the time, you know, completely engrossed in the fan. And in the back of your mind, there's, you know, oh, there might be a snake in the meditation hall. But you're so engrossed in the fan that you never deal with the whole rope snake issue. Okay? So you don't free yourself from it. And when you come out of your meditation on the fan, then again, all this fear comes up because there might be a snake in the meditation hall. Okay? So the concentration just suppresses the gross afflictions, but it doesn't have the power to cut it off, because the concentration is more on the side of stabilizing meditation, fixing the mind single-pointedly, whereas wisdom is more on the side of analytical meditation, where you're investigating to see if things really exist the way they appear. And that only through that investigation that we can actually cut the root of samsara. Okay? So that's why we need the higher training of wisdom, and why concentration alone won't do it. Okay? So this relates to the question that you were asking before about, you know, if you want to develop single-pointedness on the conventional nature of the mind. Yeah, you can do that, and some people do that as a meditation object to develop single-pointedness. And it's very, very good. But just that single-pointedness alone on the conventional nature is different than that analytical wisdom that is negating the object to be negated. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
I'm clear.
Okay.
I think that when you use these words, the object appears and the mind grasps at it.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe Geshe Tekcho was teaching about that last winter when he was here, but I don't think. And I asked him the question about that. I said, well, is that like when you're sitting at the symphony and you hear the music and you enjoy it, you know, it's pleasant to you. But then there's also when you start really getting into it, and I want to go buy the CD and I want to make that music, or, you know, it's just like, and he said, yeah, that's it. But I don't think that, generally speaking, there is some division there.
Mm-hmm.
How, it seems like we don't really experience that. Like I'm not subtle enough, I don't think, to really experience that.
Yeah.
It's important to be able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, see, the thing is, you know, when we talk about the two levels of obscuration on the mind, the afflictive obscurations and the cognitive obscurations,
mm-hmm.
the afflictive obscurations are the afflictions, ignorance, anger, hatred, and their seeds in the karma. And those are easier to remove than the cognitive obscurations, which are the subtle stains.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the gross onions are easier to get out of the pot than the subtle smell of the onions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
So now is more to focus on the gross ones, and then as you do that, the other will become more obvious.
Right. That's it. Yeah. And so that's why in the meditation on emptiness, they have us create a very extreme object, you know, you're angry because somebody accused you of something you didn't do, so that you can see that object to be negated very clearly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, otherwise we miss it.
The other question I have about words,
mm-hmm.
this came up when Dorothy Dondo was in. There's this identifying the object, and there's this, I thought it was the mode of apprehension.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's the mode of existence. Are they the same? I don't even know. But there seems like there's two different processes there. And I guess I don't understand that. Is there a thing called mode of apprehension?
Yeah.
Is there a thing called mode of existence?
Yeah.
Are they the same?
A little bit different. The mode of existence is talking about how the objects exist.
Mm-hmm.
Mode of apprehension is talking about how the mind is apprehending the object to exist. So the mode of apprehension is talking more about the mind, the subject, how it's apprehending, mm-hmm. and the mode of existence is talking about how the thing exists.
The object.
Yeah. So like in this discussion that, reality, the mode of existence of phenomena is that they're empty of true existence.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Right now, our normal way of perceiving things, our mode of apprehension, is either that things are truly existent, or we're not apprehending them as either truly existent or not truly existent. Okay. But right now, we don't have any mode of apprehension of seeing them as non-truly existent, because the ignorance is so predominant.
And so when Geshe Longtrap was here, I think he said that really finally brought this to some level of sense to me, rather than philosophical, was when he was talking about how all these different groups, I think it's that people have this experience of I, so everyone has their different explanations of it.
Yeah.
And that's where this whole thing started.
Yeah.
Is that from our own experience, that we have that experience mm-hmm. of I, and then everybody's got some way to, because it doesn't really work, somehow it generates suffering eventually. I don't know, I don't get that.
Well, we have an innate feeling of I,
mm-hmm.
you know? Like when somebody insults us, we don't know what I'm talking to me about. Or when we want happy, I want this.
Yeah, my car.
Yeah.
That's their car, don't
crash. My car, you know. Tell them off, don't tell me off. And so this feeling of I. So that is just, that's innate. Okay? That's an innate self-grasping.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? And then we develop all these philosophies about what that I is.
Mm-hmm.
And some schools say, yes, that I exists exactly as it appears to us. And then other schools start to question and scratch a little bit and say, does it really exist that way?
Mm-hmm.
You know. So you get kind of the non-Buddhist schools that say, oh, yeah, that feeling of I, of being an independent person, like having this soul, something that's really you, that's permanent, that's monolithic, that doesn't depend on anything, this essence of me-ness that's there inside of me from when I was born till I die, even after I die, you know, some permanent soul. So some schools say, yeah, that, you know, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that feeling, that's what it is. There's a permanent soul in there. You know? And then other people say, well, no, it couldn't actually be a permanent soul because things that are permanent don't change. Yeah, and the person changes. So how can you have a permanent soul that doesn't change if the person changes? So it can't be permanent. It's empty of being permanent and monolithic and independent of causes. Yeah?
How about the captain?
Yeah. So then we say, oh, but there's a captain running the show. Okay? So, you know, there's no permanent soul. But there's, you know, something in there that's the captain of the ship that's directing the whole show.
Body.
Yeah. You know, there's a real I, you know, that's the captain that's directing it. You know, all of us control freaks. Yeah. I can control my mind when I meditate. So, yeah. You know, so then we start to see, actually, is there some kind of I that's the captain of the ship? Yeah, maybe it's not permanent, partless, and independent of causes, but it's still somehow, you know, it's the captain of the ship in there. Okay, so does such a thing exist? Can such a thing exist? So then you start investigating, is it possible that there's a body and a mind and a captain? Okay? So that means that if here you took my body away, you took my mind away, there would still be the captain sitting here. What do you think? I don't think so. Okay? So some kind of self-sufficient self like that, mm-hmm. you know, that's the captain, can't exist. Okay. Then you investigate even deeper. You know, okay, there's no captain, but is there something there that's the I, that's the person? You know, there's got to be something there. Yeah. And then you investigate again, is there something there, you know, that's not the body and not the mind, but still something there that's separate from the body and mind, but maybe mixed in with them. Okay? So that's why this analytical wisdom is so important, investigating these things.
And the image of you talking about that and the importance of analysis, it's kind of like the Buddhist version of clue. You know, you put this piece together going, that wasn't it. I wasn't right about that. I mean, it is kind of a growing mind. Like, oh, that's a mistake. Because, anyway, I think I should do that once and go, okay, I've got to figure it out, as opposed to go back and continue to work with that situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe there's a little insight, a little bit, but it's like, you know, it's gone in the next moment.
Yeah, right. Yeah, because we have so much habituation to, you know, well, I'm sitting here. There's a real me here. You know, and we're not specifically thinking, oh, I'm my body, oh, I'm my mind, oh, I'm separate from my body and mind. We're not really thinking any of that. But, you know, but we are thinking, there's just me. Yeah, so when you start going, whoo. Yeah, this will be the last question. Yeah.
So in an ultimate level, we're all Buddha nature, but us right here on a conventional level, are we just like our karma ripening so we can understand this non-self and eliminate the ignorance, and then we'll be at a point where none of this will be talked about because we can understand that we're all the same?
Okay, let's see if I can repeat that question. So you're saying that we all have Buddha nature.
Ultimately, that's what we are, right? Through the scriptures?
Well, it's not what we are, it's what we have in our conventional sense right now. You know, we talk about the self, the I, we say that there's Buddha nature. Okay? And I was talking about last week sometime I was talking about the two kinds of Buddha nature. Okay, so one is the emptiness of inherent existence, and one is, you know, the clear and knowing nature of the mind and all the other impermanent things that can be transformed into the Dharmakaya, the truth body of the Buddha. So this Buddha nature exists, which is the possibility for us to become a fully enlightened being. Okay. But right now the mind is obscured by all this ignorance and all this other confusion. So we need to purify the mind and get rid of all this other stuff that's blocking it. As we do so, we're able to perceive the natural Buddha nature and develop and transform the transformational Buddha nature.
But isn't Buddha nature like it never was, never will be? It's always there?
You know, there's lots of ways of talking where we use language in different ways, but we have to know what it means. Okay? You know, because, you know, Buddha nature exists. It exists conventionally.
And it's the knowledge and wisdom gained from concentration and wisdom of the non-self, where the self that I think is here, looking at Venerable speaking to me, isn't really here, but we're actually this some karma ripening for me to...
Okay, yeah, this is a big topic, okay. Yeah, I mean, what we are right now, there's just karma ripening. We're kind of like karmic bubbles.
But do we have students, like, are we ultimately, even with our karma, are we like...
There's still Buddha nature there.
And just rip my, you know, ignorance away, like, would I be...
You know, sometimes we talk about Buddha nature as if it were an independent soul. And we have to be careful about that, you know? So we start to say, oh, Buddha nature, there's Buddha nature. That's what I really am.
I'm speaking of Buddha nature, but I can understand that we are all just one, like the unconceivable.
Yeah, Buddhism doesn't talk about us all being one. Because as soon as you say one, there's two. And three and four. We don't say
infinite.
Yeah. We say things are non-dual. Okay, that they're non-dual. But it doesn't mean I'm you and you're me.
Not even on a subtle level?
No.
Because of
I'm you and you're me, I can go to your bank account?
No, I mean on a conventional view, and this is a conventional me.
Uh-huh.
But through dependent arising, when I look at myself, I can see the molecular accumulation of me, and when I go cut down, I can see the atomic accumulation of me. And then beyond that, there are the protons and the neutrons, and I can bring that same to you.
Right.
I can do this to you, and then beyond the protons and the neutrons, I guess there's just a space that's really running everything. Mm-hmm. And in that ultimate nature, we're one.
That the way you're describing is helping us to not see things so solid, but when we're talking about emptiness of true existence, we're talking about not just the space between atoms, but we're talking about being empty of fantasized ways of existing that we're projecting onto things. Okay? In the sense that we're all empty of true existence, or each of our own emptiness of true existence, those are all the same. Emptiness is just emptiness. Okay, but that's speaking on an ultimate level. On a conventional level, it doesn't mean that we're all the same. Okay, our ultimate nature is the same. It lacks any fungibility when you search for it with an analytical mind. This is not easy to understand. Okay. But just, you know, sometimes try and, you know, clear the mind out and listen. Yeah? Okay. Let's just sit quietly.